Hi, everybody.
Hey.
It's Matt.
And Adam.
And Scott.
Better known as Matt, Adam, and Scott.
We don't do this frequently enough to get good at this. We're the shadow boxers. Okay, hey, Adam, did you wanna tee off?
No.
Adam, it's your pick.
Right, well, I know.
It's
your pick. I think you
know, but we never start with the pick, do we?
No.
We start
You're
with
right.
Yeah, we start with some material.
We start with the fact that Matt's goatee, which this is the first time I'm seeing like a real grays.
Yeah.
Not like you had a few. You know what
I mean?
You had a few standouts who were like, hey, you know, we're gonna have friends someday.
Exactly.
Now there's like a whole like the
they've multiplied.
All the friends showed up.
Yeah, all the friends showed up. Word
when
of mouth.
When did they show like, up? Was
word
it one
of mouth.
Was it viral?
I think
did the Grays
here's the
go
thing.
Viral?
The Grays A went they had a really viral moment. They did that what it is, what's up dance go really viral on TikTok.
They went on Hot Ones.
They went on Hot Ones also. They had a really good interview on Hot Ones. You should check it out. They closed out the season.
Oh, cool. Just crushed and, a bomb beyond insanity.
Yes.
Just took it down. Didn't even drink milk.
Is there a Da Bomb and then there's another level?
One beyond that.
Is that like is that like
Da Bomb
Cholula?
Da Bomb is like 9th out of 10, and that's the one that always bucks him off the horse.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Right.
And then the 10th one is also hard.
Final dab.
Yeah. So did
is
they
that what
dab?
You're gonna say, Scott?
The Grays
dabbed. They dabbed. And then they bled out of their eye sockets.
But that is an interesting question, Adam. Do you think that gray hairs or a receding hairline, you know, if we're going to swing it around?
Yeah, we can swing it.
You know what I'm saying? Does it happen gradually? Because a lot of times I hear about like events, like singular events that will all of a sudden, it'll be just holding the line and then it'll just, the levee breaks.
That's right.
I'd like to talk about that a bit.
Yeah. And that's coming from someone who has neither, right?
Currently, right.
I think your hair is proceeding. It's not recent. It's continuing.
he's continuing
to encroach. It's unbelievable.
I will say your hair is just
Benjamin Button.
I'm surprised at the lack of summer mullety vibes from you.
No, there's plenty going on back here.
Oh, it's just by your head.
It's
tucked away.
Yeah,
it's poof.
What's going on with your mullet now, Matt? I feel like we should have a mullet check-in because last pod.
Mullet check-in. New segment of the show, mullet check-in. I'll do a new theme song.
Yeah, it's a mullet check-in. A fucking mullet check-in.
My mullet is gone. The hair is still long on top. I think we're really just, at this point, we're just desperate to try something new. And I think I just keep looking back, you know, my iPhone updates me with photos of us on tour like every day. Yeah. And I'm just like, my hair just looked better in 2018. And I'm just going to do that.
Okay. All right. So you abandon it is what you're saying. You quit. You're a quitter.
I mean, quit or, you know, I committed to something for like 9 months and now I'm changing it.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry. You know, I don't want to spin it negatively.
You know how people know how people like to say like there are two types of people and then they, you know, say, you know, winners and losers or whatever they distinguish the two types as. What do you think of this? There are two types of people. People that get the same haircut their whole lives and people who change it up all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I think that's true.
Right. There's people who like, they lock it in and they're like, this is it. And then there's people Brad Pitt who just like,
what can't that man
do with hair on his head?
And it doesn't always like, it's not tied to like a person's limitations with their hair either.
And it's also not tied to looks. Mm. It's not, because a lot of times people try things that don't look good.
Yeah.
But they're just constantly. Because here's what I think. I think this is the tip of the iceberg of a bigger personality trait, right?
Yeah.
This is a person that will like to try different wardrobes, maybe different places to live, just a generally more adventurous person, different frames in their glasses, different restaurants or cuisine.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm always surprised by, and this kind of applies to both of you, but men who never really tried to like have long hair.
Interesting.
You know? Because like, that you can do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You could do it. But then like maybe you just never do it. And you guys might never do it.
Well, but that's why I tried. That's why I tried. And then I started Ted Lasso season 3 and I saw Jamie Tart. And I was like, Jamie Tart's hair looks terrible.
It looked poopy.
Yeah, it looked poopy. Terrible.
Adam, do you ever look back at
Jamie Tart?
Just poopy. I can't do any other part of it.
Adam is really good at doing accents for 9 seconds.
That's right. And then he goes off the rails so fast. Yeah.
Like, Adam, do everyone a favor. Do your Russian accent.
The Russian's probably the best one, too.
I know, but it fades at about 9.
Yeah. So
do a little bit of it.
give me something to talk about.
Okay. Politics.
And you know, you have down in Florida, you have Ron DeSantis who doesn't want to have any type of education for any children.
And now it's in Kazakhstan.
Now I'm Borat. Now I'm Borat. Yeah.
That was just
Scott,
creeping.
You were right.
Yeah.
It really just
that was just creeping west until it crossed the state, the country lines. Remember one time. This is one of my better ones, if I may toot my own horn. Adam knows
where you're
saying.
I know where you're going with this.
We went to this party. Matt, you're going to remember this. We went to this party in
Atlanta.
Isn't
my Robert Duvall, right?
We went to a house party in Atlanta one time, and at a certain point in the night, everyone was sort of gathered in one area, and I stopped the party and was like, hey, guys.
Stopped the party.
Yeah, I need everyone's attention.
Clink the glass toast moment.
I was like, I need everyone to stop what they're doing and listen in. Adam has an unbelievable Jeff Bridges impression. He's like, what?
Meanwhile.
And everyone's like, do it. And I was like, I don't have one. I've never done that before in my life. I'm like, come on, you're being modest. Do it. And everyone's like, yeah, let's hear it.
Incredible. Oh, man. That's such a good, like, prank.
All right.
Man.
That's good for our banter segment of the show.
Well, let me introduce the song for this week, the latest track from our never-ending, hopefully, playlist, Nobody Knows the Shadowboxers But You. This installment is a song called All You Have to Do Is Lie, which hopefully you've listened to by the time this podcast comes out, which is probably helpful. This is a song that I believe we wrote and probably recorded sort of right around when we wrote it in, I think, 2014 is my guess. Maybe 2015, but close to 10 years ago somehow, which is wild. And this was a song that we wrote living in Nashville when most of the band was living in a house together in East Nashville and, you know, writing and demoing songs every single day, sort of like 9 to 5. This feels like as good a time of any to introduce a surprise guest to the podcast this week.
Our first surprise guest.
That's right. And the prime writer of All You Have to Do Is Lie. And most of you probably know him best as our longtime drummer and amazing friend. Please welcome to the podcast, Mr. Cole McSween.
Hey, guys.
Hello. Welcome.
Welcome, Cole.
Thank you, guys.
Absolutely.
For the listeners out there, Cole has just been patiently listening to us be schmucks for the last 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Which he.
That's basically what it was like being in the Shadowboxers, though.
To be in the band. Anyway.
I'm usually just. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, forget 10
minutes.
I'm
just chilling
minutes.
In the back seat while you guys are just.
My God, these guys are idiots. That's right. Okay, so Cole, what's your memory of writing this?
Well, so I don't remember a lot about it because, you know, it was 8 years ago. But I do remember it was a classic thing for me at the time to come up with, like, chords and just a basic melody, no lyrics at all. Like, at the time, I had nothing to do with lyrics. So I think I came with the full song, and I remember going over to your house, Adam, and I basically played you the full song, no lyrics, just chords and humming, and you wrote all the lyrics in probably like a day or two.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I remember that. I remember that very well. I think we sort of recorded a voice memo when you were over at my house. And I remember writing the lyrics to this while I was waiting. We had one car at the time, and I was waiting to pick up my wife from yoga class. I was sitting in the car listening to the voice memo in the car, and I remember I wrote all of the lyrics. It was like a 20-minute thing. And I don't know. You take it away, Matt.
You're so first of all, Adam, this is my more general question, but like, this is definitely the second, if not the third song that we've talked about where you've mentioned like, yeah, I was just like in the grocery and I just like wrote the lyrics while I was walking down the aisle, or I was in my car and I did. Is this just like, is that something that you've always done lyrically? Do you find inspiration by just like being out and moving? Like, I'm a crazy person often, and I like walking. I didn't realize this until a couple years ago, but I need to be like walking or at least up. Yeah. Do you need to do you feel like you need to be in motion to write best?
Honestly, like, I've never really thought about it until we've started talking about how most of these songs were written. But I have found that I get like immense writer's block if I'm just like sitting in a studio, or, you know, sitting in the room where I like came up with the thing, trying to work through the lyrics, like, you know, especially if like long drives or like just like sitting on a park bench or something like that. That's where like most of my, or like if we were staying at an Airbnb, like doing a ride in LA, like sitting in like, you know, some weird backyard that I've never been in before, that seems to help. I don't know why. It's an interesting observation.
But. Well, this is another example of a song that instrumentally and melodically implying a certain type of lyrical theme. And then because of the collaborative nature of being in a band, Cole handed it off to you, Adam, and you wrote lyrics that are different from what this song would expect or like usually require. Like, for example, and I know you teased this as the word of the tease word from the last episode, but like the first time that I saw you underneath the parasol, I don't think anybody's using the word parasol in a word that sounds like in a song that sounds like you know, Earth, Wind, and Fire, you know, and I think that's one of the cool things that these handoffs allow. We mention it many times on this podcast. Novocaine, we've talked about it for other songs as well, but that's the clearest example to me aside from this one. And so I guess I would be curious to know, like, what about this melody and chord structure made you want to write this type of song? Like, how did this subject come about?
Yeah, so actually, as sort of like a flip on, you know, what I tried to do with Novocaine, which was like, the song came with such a vibe of what it should be. And I was like, well, maybe we can do that, but we could do it, you know, in like a modern way. This was so in like the Earth, Wind, and Fire world in my head. And Cole, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about the inspiration for for it, but I kind of wanted like vintage words. You know, I kind of was like, I kind of wanted to make it cheesy. And like the first line of the song, you know, I got just the memory that I'm needing to recall the first time that I saw you underneath the parasol. Like, that is not a modern thing at all. Like, that's very throwback. And parasol is like a, you know, like no one says that word, right?
I'm pretty sure I had to look it up when you told me what it is. Yeah,
it's what people called umbrellas at some point in time, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and then like, oh man, what a perfect day. It feels like it was yesterday. It's just, I like kind of wanted to do like a classic, you know, like, you know, walking in the park type of thing. But I remember the chorus lyrics, which are, you know, the sentiment of this song is very bizarre. It's so desperate. I mean, it's like, it's sort of like the saddest, most desperate concept, which is like, I would prefer you to lie to me so we can have one more night together than tell me that you're planning to leave me. Like, that is just like such miserable desperation, you know? But I was kind of like, I remember coming up with the lyric, all you have to do is lie first. And I was like, well, that's kind of interesting. Like, what, why would you be asking someone to lie? But yeah. the thing that I like about the chorus is that it's just this ongoing sentence, basically. There's no, like, each line ties to the next one. All you have to do is lie if you're feeling like leaving me and all our dreams behind, because I couldn't believe in anything but you and I. All you have to do is lie. It's like this, it's just this ongoing, like, pleading, you know, desperate thing. So I liked the sort of like cyclical aspect of the lyrics.
That's cool. And it kind of lends itself to the theme too. It's like, there's never really closure. You're never really, you're never really putting your foot down about any, this person is, there's a weakness to this person about, you know, it's like, it's like the Yeats poem, you know, tread softly because you tread on my dreams. It's like, if you're going to kill me, just do it slowly and,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, it's just every part of this song is just like so desperate and kind of old school, like, you know, like saying stuff like, ain't no man who's going to stay. You know, those are not lyrics I would ever write. But something about the vibe of this song was just like, you know, I wanted to make it cheesy and sort of classic.
Yeah, it reminds me of Ain't Too Proud to Beg, lyrically, a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of that concept, only more like...
Yeah, like, but even...
less confident.
Yeah, less confident, that's right. Well, that's so cool. Hey, guys, I have an idea. Okay. I had an idea, like minutes before this podcast, and we could cut this if this is stupid, but... I thought that in order to give this podcast some more legitimacy, I should
not
do
that
an
it needs
ad.
It.
Not that it needs it, but I should do an ad read.
Yeah, yeah, that's great.
Okay, so this podcast.
What do you mean? We've had so many ad reads.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. But this one is going to be a little different. I want to try.
Okay, cool. Cool.
Okay, this podcast is brought to you by Jugs Pitching Machines. The number one selling pitching machine company in the world. For over 5 decades, Jugs Sports has remained the leading producer of baseball and softball pitching machines worldwide. Jugs machines are designed to develop muscle memory, hand-eye coordination, and to give hitters as many game-like strikes as they'll ever need. Whether you'll need to work on a 90-mile-an-hour slider or a 60-mile-an-hour curveball, Jugs offers a pitching machine to fit your specific needs. So go to jugsports.com/nobody-knows-the-shadowboxers-but-you and just see what happens.
I mean,
see if that's a real thing. I don't know.
Do you have to get a new pitching machine for each different type of pitch?
No, Cole. Like. That's such a good question. There's different pitching machines. Like, for example, the BP3 softball pitching machine with changeup.
That's
yeah,
the one
you
I
have that one.
Yeah, I can tell you all about it.
So do you think Adam was staying back on the changeup and knowing how to drive it to right center, like in his sleep? No, he had to work on that. So he bought the BP3 softball pitching machine with changeup. So it has two different slots and you can adjust them. You put the ball in one or the other and it comes out because each is running a different speed.
My daughter is 15 months old. She hits a 90 mile an hour fastball already because of the BP changeup.
The BP3, you know?
Incredible.
I had the 2 model, but yeah.
Yeah,
And if Jugs, you know, if they want to send, you know, if Jugs, if you want to send me the 3 model, that'd be great.
I'll speak to them.
Does Jugs also make sports cards?
No, that's Topps. You're thinking of Topps baseball cards.
Also a sponsor, ironically.
Also ironically a sponsor of ours.
All right, cool. Back to
the show.
Back to the pod. Yeah. So I'd like to talk about the chords because I didn't write this. Cole brought this in. You had already written lyrics and you guys presented it to me. So like Matt, I kind of sat back on this one. And then I just kind of jumped in on the harmonies and I sang on it, but I didn't write it. And in hearing the chords and in singing on it, this was one of the first songs, Cole, that you brought in to us. This was like, you had, I believe, like a songwriting awakening that happened around this time, maybe a little bit earlier. And this was one of the first wave of Cole songs that came into the Shadowboxers. And, you know, Finding a Problem was one of them. Others, which we will get to, and I believe is going to be my next pick, but we'll talk about that at another time. But I just remember being so blown away by your ability as a songwriter to compose chords and melodies that seemed already so sophisticated and like realized. Because let's just, using myself as an example, I've been doing it for a lot longer and I don't think that I could come up with this. And it just feels like you as a musician have always had that sure-footedness, sure-handedness as a player and as a decision maker, like your taste. But I didn't know that would translate into songwriting, and it just did so seamlessly. And I just don't even know if you realize how effortless that is and like rare that is, not effortless, how effortless it seems.
Off.
And how rare that is. And then I'll let you speak to that. But I also want to say that we're recording on the day that you released your song, Look to Heaven, part of your solo project. And I think it's pretty cool to be talking about one of your first songs that you've written. And then on the day that you've written your most released your most recent, I see a very cool progression of your songwriting craft that has developed a lot in the production sense, of course, because you were, you know, dependent on Adam and the rest of us to kind of create the sound. Now you're doing it yourself as you've developed your guitar playing and keyboard playing and every aspect of what your songs sound like to the point that you fully self-produce. And I just want to hear from you about your path from this song to where you are now and kind of how your time writing with us has affected, if at all, your writing and where you're at today.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I truly owe every bit of songwriting, you know, everything I've learned about songwriting, I learned from you guys, you know, like just being in the room with you guys. When we were living in Nashville and, you know, like Adam said, it was just our job to be cranking out songs. And I got to, you know, just watch you guys, you know, for a whole year writing songs, Adam producing things and like him figuring it out along the way. And I really do just owe everything to you guys. And that experience just, you know, really changed me. I think like as a musician, I before I started writing songs, I had always played guitar and just come up with little ideas, but I didn't know a way to like realize those ideas into something bigger. And it wasn't until, you know, I joined the band and I was like, oh, there's an outlet for these ideas that I could actually like, you know, bring them an idea, bring you guys, you know, chord progression or groove or just anything. And like, it could actually become something now, you know. Before I was just like literally just a drummer who didn't know how to do anything technical or didn't know how to write lyrics. So
this guy called chords cables.
No, wires.
Wires.
Even worse.
Wires. That's right.
Still oh new gosh. To this day, just to yeah, just well, to get on yeah. people's nerves. yeah.
Wires.
So yeah, I think everything just came from watching you guys do it and being like, oh, I think I could actually do this. I think if I just like put some time in and, you know, don't let just this idea just be a third, you know, a cool little riff, but actually like work at it and, you know, put a melody to it and, you know, think more about production and stuff. That was like a huge change for me.
Yeah. Do you that's recall? Awesome. Cool. It's really cool to hear that, first of all. And second, I just want to know if you recall, and I know you bring up a great point because I'm always amazed with how much, like most of the time, Adam and Scott remember about the processes of these songs, many of which were written very long ago. Do you recall, Cole, after then having sort of like been in the rooms with us while we were, you know, learning how to record and produce and co-writing together, do you recall sort of like actively being like, ooh, I want to take a change from this Earth, Wind, and Fire song, and I want to take a chord, I want to build off of this chord progression, or was it more of a subconscious thing?
Man, yeah, I definitely think that like I'm similar to you, Matt, where it is hard for me to recall all of these details. I do remember like before I joined the band, I was kind of like just in jazz school and listening to jazz and listening to like funk music. That's like all I listened to, funk music and jazz, like instrumental stuff like that. And then when I started playing with you guys, I got introduced to more of like this like retro pop stuff, you know, the Jacksons, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Bee Gees, all this stuff that was hugely influential to us. And I realized that the kind of songwriting that I really liked was stuff that had like interesting chords to it. So I would, you know, sit down and try and figure out, you know, chords to these songs. And I definitely think that you guys are spot on, you know, with the Earth, Wind, and Fire reference. Like, this is definitely Earth, Wind, and Fire slow jam territory.
Yeah, that's the way of the world all day.
Yeah, exactly. And then one other reference, which I thought it was interesting, like lyrically, it's kind of in the same headspace and musically as well. I think this was the era of when I got really obsessed with Tata Vega.
Oh, yeah.
And she has this song called Just When Things Were Getting Good. And it's this amazing ballad. And she's like pleading, like, why are you always leaving me just when things are getting good? But it has these changes and this like kind of smooth, soulful feel. That was like huge influence. I mean, we'll probably reference the track now in the podcast and it's going to be like, wow, this is a complete ripoff. But like the chord changes in there are so interesting.
Will we ever be together?
was like probably the biggest influence that I can remember right now.
I will say too, like the songs, I would always be so just floored by the songs that you would bring in, Cole, because to me they always felt like you had just uncovered like a lost version of whatever the reference was. You know, it's like,
yeah,
this was you excavated a lost Earth, Wind, and Fire song. Like, it's so classic, but like it's not a ripoff. It's just they forgot to write this song. You know, that's what it felt like. Or like with, you know, another song that I won't mention because maybe it'll come up, but it was like, oh, James Taylor, yep, he just completely forgot to write this one. Or he wrote it and like did so much heroin that he didn't remember it, you know? Like that, well, your songs felt so classic, but they weren't ripoffs. Like it's just an amazing thing.
Thanks, man.
It's like, Adam, it's like how you used to say like Bad Mama Jamma's like one of the best Stevie Wonder songs that he never wrote.
Yeah.
It's like somehow he missed that one, but like he wrote it, right? Yeah. Like he didn't know he did it or he didn't sing it, but like that's him though.
That's him. Yeah, for sure.
It felt like, it feels like Earth, Wind, and Fire like just didn't, like they just, you like incepted the song out of Maurice White's mind.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know if you guys have ever talked about this on the podcast, but I feel like Scott would always give us like these writing challenges almost. Mm-hmm. You know, we would be in this phase where we would be listening to, you know, I remember the Destiny by the Jacksons. Like everyone was almost like, all right, come in next week with a song that the Jacksons could have written.
Yeah.
And so I just like, we had a lot of cool songs come out of that we would play live and people like loved. Yeah. And so I think I just tried to do that with my songs. Cause it's like, you know, I was just beginning to write and I'm like, well, I think the best way to learn how to write is to try and write a song that you would want to hear on a Earth, Wind, and Fire record or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's so much easier said than done.
That's what I'm saying. That's what was so mind-blowing about it. Yeah. And honestly, so refreshing to hear your, you know, because it had been Matt, Adam, and I writing for the whole duration of the band. And then in comes Cole, who's just bringing a really strong jazz background and soul, just understanding of the genre. And then when you added your songwriting expertise and like just influence into the band and infused it with Adam's lyrics and then in other songs that we will listen to later, I would say it was just a shot of life into the songwriting machine of the band, and it was very refreshing. Speaking of refreshing, have you guys tried award-winning air purifier Rabbit Air? Rabbit Air, quiet, effective, and quality. It's the winner of the most prestigious Red Dot Design Award, which is in the industry known as the Oscars for product design. I'd like to talk for a bit about the BioGS. It's engineered.
Don't even get me started on the BioGS.
Yeah, it's engineered to trap and reduce many types of pollutants and allergens. The Whisper Quiet technology is a welcome departure from the typical noise of other air purifiers so that you can turn on your BioGS and breathe in peace. I'd also like to talk about the MinUSA 2 customizable air purifier.
Please don't skip that.
Oh, actually, the way they... Yeah, so it's designed to adapt to and complement any space. For a flash of color, decorate with one of our artist series font panels, or conserve floor space by hanging your unit on the wall. Tailor your air purifier's filtration power to your needs by choosing a customized filter option and create the perfect air purifier for your home. Head to rabbitair.com/ nobody knows the shadow boxes but you and just...
Figure it out.
See what happens. Let us know.
Yeah, what's crazy? I have 9 of them. You know?
Yeah, I can tell.
My house has 2 good rooms. Enough to, my house has 2 rooms.
One's good enough to purify the entire home, but I've got 9.
I got 9 because I just love... They're so quiet. I got nine turned on right now. You can't even hear it. And I got a live mic in the room.
You probably recorded vocals while nine of them were going. That's how quiet they are. Speaking of recording vocals, let's talk about tracking the vocals on this song.
Yeah.
I remember. Okay, so this song is very chordally sophisticated. There is this whole step sequence, three chord sequence that gets you from pre-chorus into the chorus, which kind of elevates the melody jumps and it becomes this falsetto sort of Bee Gees thing. I know as a singer, I felt like, because I took the back half of the verses and did this very, I felt like I was playing Maurice White and Philip Bailey in the same song.
Yeah.
You know, where on the verse, it's very, that's the way of the world. And then it does these whole step chordal jumps into this other key center for the chorus. And it goes Bee Gees all of a sudden, or, you know, After the Love Is Gone for another EWF reference.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And better songs we cannot name as references. And I remember singing ad libs to this and like not really knowing where to go. I was sweating to try and figure out spots to place a lot of these vocals because these chords are so intricate. And as any soloist will tell you, the more intricate the chords are, the more limited to lay on top of them you are. There's a lot of notes that get taken off the board as these changes move quickly between themselves. So it was like an exercise in restraint on the ad-libs, I think. The harmonies, we do a lot of 1-3-5, you know, like the root note, the third and the fifth of a certain harmony stack, and oftentimes the seventh. And there was a lot more going on to these harmonies. I just want to ask you guys, like, what are your memories of, because I retracked, you know, recently the chorus vocals, you know, just to thicken the stacks and add some more colors and textures to it and like buff it up. And I, even still, I'm like having to play these chords and all of the flat ninths and all of the sharp 11ths and things that are going on in some of these chords that just are not intuitive to the listener and yet come off very easy because the melody is very simple. Like, do you guys have thoughts on tracking vocals to this or other instruments and kind of feeling a little stumped by your first instinct, not like sounding like a wrong note?
For me, I have,
Yeah, me neither.
It's sort of like the, well, no. I mean, I'm backing you up here. It's sort of like, you know, how Stevie, you know, the great thing about Stevie Wonder that we always talk about, you know, he has all the theory and he includes it in the songs, but it never gets in the way of the song being successful. And all those flat nines and sharp 11s that you're talking about, I feel like they that's exactly what they're doing in this song. They're actually just supporting this really, really quality song that's already there. The only memories I have are just like the pure joy of figuring out where the ad-libs were going to be and finally locking down the, all you have to do, and just like getting my Maurice in. And
yeah, I mean,
and then also probably just having discovered what a mellotron was and getting in the flutes and then being like, oh, let's also take this a little Marvin Gaye and get those vibraphones in the outro. Dun, 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 yes. Dun, 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 dun. I all I remember is having so much fun laying in all those parts.
Yeah. And I think Scott, you did a lot of the heavy lifting on the, you know, the harmony stack and the chorus, but I do remember, and you know, looking back, it's pretty, you know, I don't know, like hindsight is 20/20, I guess, but I feel like this was one of the first times we did like the full Bee Gees stack that we came to then do in pretty much like every song from that point forward. I don't know if that's like fully accurate, but this stack, you know, that is like the backbone of the chorus and really like jumps out of the, you know, like page. It's a bad metaphor, but like
jumps off the page. Yeah.
Yeah. No, out. Cause it's,
oh, you know, my mistake. It's totally on me, man.
Yeah, yeah, no. It's fine. It'll not happen again. I feel like this was sort of a turning point for figuring out our like falsetto blend that could work as like a powerful chorus. Because before this, it had always like we had sort of belted a lot of our three part, especially like a big chorus. You know, it was much more sort of I don't know. We hadn't figured out that falsetto thing yet. And to your point, Matt, this song is a classic example of the Shadowboxers just absolutely fucking up a second verse groove.
Yeah.
Because this is like the Baby Be Mine of the Shadowboxers, where like, you know, we every time, because we would always sort of like keep verse one simple. And every time, like post first chorus, we would start building out a second verse and it would just be so happening. And I think this was one of the first times where that happened, with the Mellotron followed by that guitar riff. And the like auto wah guitar underneath, like it's just wonderful.
That's Lady in My Life, I think you're referring to.
You're right.
Back half of Thriller. Yep.
Yeah. Not so, the front half of Thriller.
Definitely not.
God, no. What? What does that mean?
He would never.
Baby Be Mine's on the front half.
No, I know. But like, God forbid we would talk about the front half of Thriller.
Yeah. Like, what a horrible thing to be similar record. To wannabe starting something.
Yeah, yeah. That reference sucked.
Bad ref. So besides redoing a lot of the things from the original demo, I don't, unless somebody has anything really that they want to add. I mean, I think we basically, and Cole's actual live drums, which are beautiful. Yes. We kind of just made the OG version better. You just kind of just made it better.
Yeah.
Many structural changes. Yeah.
No, this was mostly just remixing. There's some like, you know, little things here and there. And obviously Cole laying down live drums was essential otherwise.
And re-singing, at least for me. But
we only re-sang the chorus. We didn't even really re-sing it. We just added some stacks. You know, this is probably the first of these that is as close to the original demo. And there's, cause like this, the demo and the final, there's no real tricks in this song, you know, it was just like, we just wanted to like do this type of thing justice. That was the whole goal. You know, there was no attempt to be like, what would it sound like if like, you know,
yeah,
I don't know.
If Tame Impala did this.
Yeah.
So Scott, I want to ask you a question, which is the question that we ask ourselves at the end of every single pod episode, which is, why didn't this song come out until last week?
I think because this song, as we've identified, was very retro feeling. And for a long time in this band, the word retro was a bad word. It was like a word that we were allergic to. And we fought a lot about that. But as a whole, you know, as we had been receiving feedback from various industry people telling us how we should brand ourselves, the modernness or retroness of our sound and our appearance and overall branding was like a hot button issue that we...
Yeah.
Didn't feel, at least between the three of us, like we fought about it all the time. And this is, as you say, Adam, undeniably retro feeling.
Yeah.
And there was a time there that maybe the pendulum swayed towards favoring a modern sound because we were in the Timberlake world. And we wanted to sound like we would exist on the radio with songs that had retro-inspired elements, but did not sound like a gimmick of a band trying to be an older-sounding band. Like, even though that's completely, we put it out now, and we're also happy about it, and it feels like us, and we maybe overthought it. You know, again, and we've talked about this on earlier pods, but being in the middle, in the eye of the storm with all of this God, we had so many voices in our ears, and it was really like pulling at the nucleus of this band in a lot of different ways. And it was hard for us to know how to proceed and what our sound needed to be, but we did know that the main gatekeeper was JT. And if anything moved for us, it would have been because he made it move. And that's why we signed with him. And I think that when we sent the song to him, he really dug it, but like wanted to, like, I think he gave bigger reactions to more modern sounding songs, or wanted to push this in a different direction. I think probably the former more likely than the latter. And so there it sat as being a ready-made Earth, Wind, and Fire sounding, undeniable, good soul song that I didn't, that didn't have a place on Apollo when we were writing to have. Like the same, it's hard for people to imagine that All You Have to Do Is Lie and Time Zone come from the same band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? And at that point,
that's what the people
we were
saying.
All trying to write Time Zone. Each yeah. session we went in, we were trying to get Time Zone. And when we got Time Zone, I remember when we came back and we sent it and we played it for you, Cole, and Carlos, and you guys were like, oh my God, you guys did it. You got like the big anthem, like arena song. And then we did that, and then we did. And it's amazing. I actually just re-listened to Apollo for the first time in a long time and was just blown away by the songs. It's like, it just felt like what it was. It was just fresh and sleek and power punch. And it was all everything that we wanted it to be, it was. And then I think now just with time after Slow March, we were, you know, actively trying to create stuff that was different. And now we're in this period of, you know, we don't care as much about any of that stuff. And we just want to put out songs that we feel connected to. And now that we are older too, and we're less like are we a retro band? Are we a boy band? Or, you know, we're less in the orbit of all of that. It's like, who cares? We just want to put out stuff that we like. And this is a song that we really like. So
it's funny to hear you say that, like, retro was like this bad word in the band, because it's like at that time in our life, it's like it seemed like that's all we could write.
And not only that, it's all we listened to.
Yeah.
It was, Oh, you're picking at scabs, Cole.
And so much of our, like, you know, for the people who are listening to this, who like came to our live shows, you know, in 2015, 2016, it was like, we were like a 70s funk band wearing wearing like suits on stage and like, you know, like
doing those dance moves,
trying to be, you know,
we weren't doing modern dance moves,
the Jacksons. Yeah. It's like, we were being a retro band, but then like recording this stuff, it's like, well, we don't want to be a retro band.
It was
weird push-pull at that time.
My friends from high school were listening to the new Jonas Brothers record, and they described it to me as Burgundy Suit Era TSB.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty much it.
Oh, man. ASOS suits do not wear well.
They are basically
there's
made
a shelf life on those.
Yeah.
Turns out, I think it's, you know, five nights in a row of sweating through them, you know, it's not good for the suit.
I think they're supposed to just be, I think they're supposed to be disposable. I think it's a one wear thing, actually.
Oh my God.
Jose Banks.
Don't make me ad read for daily contact lenses. Yeah. I will. I'll do it.
This show brought to you by End Fast Fashion Now.
All right. Well, this is something that we have a lot of things kind of happening and coming out simultaneously. So I also want to give the guys a chance to promote themselves. We got some stuff happening before we let the kids go.
Camera here, camera there. Scott, tell them what you're working on.
Wow. Okay.
You got a song that just came out?
I did. I just released the first single off of my debut record. And like Cole was talking about earlier with Cole, like, you know, the birth of his songwriting happened as a result of this band. I was a fly on the wall learning from Adam, sitting in the back seat of him producing Slow March of Time and all of the demos that we've done, and had never tried it myself until the pandemic, and got up the courage to try, and came out with a record that I am very proud of, that I self-produced and wrote, and I released
it's
just
fucking phenomenal.
Thanks. It's I just so released good. The first song off of it, Time and Temperature. I'm doing the whole thing on Bandcamp because I want to make it about the people that listen to this, the people that know our story, that like to see the evolution of where we started and where we're going and where we are now, and not just throw it into the void of Spotify. And so if you guys would be willing to check it out and kind of join me in the living room and listen to these songs, I'm going to release them on Bandcamp, and I'm going to release a single the first Friday of every month. I released it the first Friday of May was Time and Temperature. The next one will come out the first Friday of June. The third one will come out the first Friday of July. And then the first Friday of August, I'm going to release the full record. And I'm really excited about it. And thanks for letting me talk about it, Matt.
Of course. Kirby?
For those who don't know, my middle name is Kirby. And Matt is, I think, one of the...
Do you hate that I call you Kirby? Do you like
it? No, no. I love it. I really honestly love it. You're one of the few people who call me that, and it's very endearing. I like that. But yeah, I just released a song today called Look to Heaven. For those who haven't listened, it's, you know, Christian music that's very much influenced by, you know, like we've been talking, my time with the Shadowboxers. It's very soul pop, but just so happens to be, you know, Christian music. So yeah, hope you guys check it out.
It's awesome. And
it's so
and
good.
All of your releases are equally, it's like you just are batting 1,000 with this. It's insane. Every time you release a song, somehow like all you have to do is lie. It's like the reference to the artists that you nod to. In this case, you posted today something about Hall & Oates. It's like, how did these guys not write? How did this, we make it as a society this long without this song existing? That's how I feel every time I listen to one of your songs.
Oh, man. Thank you, dude.
Matt?
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's great. I love the song. Scott, Time and Temperature is so great. And it's been so nice to hear the evolution from when you were initially playing it, like out at Hotel Cafe, to where it is now. It's really great. And Cole, what I was mentioning earlier was that my bandmates from high school, I always love sharing whenever you have a new song come out, and they always have a better reaction to your songs than any new they're like, yeah, new Shadowboxers was all right, except all you have to do is lie. And I was like, yeah, it's because it's a Cole song.
Yeah, it's great. Oh, that's so funny.
It's so great. Awesome. I love the song, Cole.
Matt, what are you working on?
The next St. John Jaguar song is out on Tuesday, June 6th. It is the last single before the EP comes out. I guess I can tell the fans it's coming out on June 23rd. The whole EP with an additional song. I was in Nashville. I've been traveling back and forth to Nashville for the past year, better part of a year, working on my proper solo project, and we just started mastering those songs. So I'll have more news about that soon.
Amazing.
Love it.
Wonderful.
Is it gonna be full length or EP?
We're just right now I got seven. I got seven songs. So I think if I were Steely Dan, I could call that an album. But I think we'll probably call it an EP.
Nice. Woo. Exciting. Woo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Addy? You got Addy? You got anything going on?
You know, nothing public facing. There's always things cooking, but now I'm mostly just cooking a 15-month-old human.
Mm. You know. But you shouldn't. I don't think that's healthy.
Oh, yeah. Shit, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta get that out of the oven.
Yeah, right now. I think it should come out, like, earlier.
This is in the microwave.
Oh, that's fine.
Oof. Okay.
Low power, though? You did it on the low power?
Yeah, low watt, 8 minutes, then flip it.
I would like to say that my dad, every Sunday when I was growing up, used to make us either waffles or pancakes.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say make, I put that in quotes because what he used to do is take them out of the Eggo box in their plastic wrap. You know, they would come in, in threes, and microwave them in the plastic.
And in the plastic?
Yeah.
No.
And,
come on, Herb.
And then at some point, I don't know what age, let's say 16, 15. No, it couldn't have been. I don't know. Maybe even probably earlier. I don't know. I'm a little hazy. I was like, hey.
Probably from all the plastic you ate.
Do you think that I. Nice. Do you think that I. Is that okay? Is that like. Is that help? Is that all right? You know? It's like, yeah, it's fine. He's a doctor. Oh, the guy's a doctor.
That's awesome. I love that.
Oh, Adam, close this out.
I would be glad to. Thank you all for listening. Stay tuned. We're going to have more coming up. And with that, I will say nobody knows the Shadow Boxers but you. And nobody knows you but the Shadow Boxers.
So long, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Ta-ta.
Cole, thanks for joining us.
Ta-ta Vega.
Ta-ta Vega, baby.
Cha-cha real smooth.